show on the ride home after the movie, and because we've got another awesome comic book movie, we have another super crossover special with the lovely lads from Hey Kids Comics, the adorable Andrew Farmer.
Hello.
And the equally adorable, what's his name? The ginger guy. Oh yeah, Cole Houston. Hey!
The ginger guy. Comics.
Yeah, the ginger guy was actually a villain in the Muggerville universe.
Nice.
Yeah, of course he was.
He had big hands. Great big hands.
Yes, he does.
Were they people hands?
No, they weren't. That's the thing.
That's craziness.
And of course, with me always is the fantastically phenomenal Bobby Blakey. Yay!
Hello.
And we are going to talk about Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, a fantastic comic book movie authored by Frank Miller.
I don't even know.
And as always, we're going to start off with how the movie compares to the teaser trailers that you saw and what you were expecting to see. Now, this being a sequel, that's probably going to be a little bit easier to anticipate what you're going to see, but still, I want to hear what everybody thinks, and I am going to make Bobby start.
Ooh. Well, actually, I love the first film, so I was really excited for this one. When the trailers came out, I thought it looked awesome. I did enjoy the movie. And I think I've enjoyed it, the more I've sat with it and thought about it, I've enjoyed it even more. But when I came out of it, I was a little disappointed because I felt it was kind of slow. But, like I said, more I sat with it, by the time I sat down to write the review I had to do for it, I think I gave it a way better review than I thought when I first walked out the door of the theater. But I do have a couple of problems, but we can discuss that at a later time.
Okay, Cole, how do you think it compared to what you saw in the teasers?
Honestly, what's weird with this one is I remember seeing, as far as teasers go, I remember seeing some kind of like poster image of Rosario Dawson like 6 years ago or something.
Yeah, right after the first one, it was like, yeah!
Yeah! It was like, Sin City, A Day to Kill For. And then, periodically I'd think, did I miss that? Was it like 300 Rise of Empire where I just, oh yeah, and then I forgot and it was gone. And I kept looking and looking. And it's like, no, it never happened. It hasn't happened. I kind of gave up. And then the next thing I know, oh, by the way, here it is. I don't know what Robert Rodriguez was doing all that time. Perhaps Rick Perry had him under his thumb or something because they're right there in Austin. But
Spy Kids 85, Cole. Spy Kids 85.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, that he probably had to lick his wounds after that. But
if I had a kid, it would be my favorite movie.
as long as they brought the Alexa Vega back for it, I'd watch that movie over and over and over. That girl's got
easy killer. I guess she's an adult now. So you're
She's an adult, and let me tell you, she is super hot. And I feel extra creepy knowing that I watched her when she was a little kid, and I'm thinking different thoughts about her now. So,
yeah, it's like I remember Spy Kid. She was her cute kid. Like now, it's like, so. But
Bobby goes,
honestly,
she's an adult.
Yeah, it's hard to look at her and not think, gosh, she used to be a kid. Now I don't know what to think. But I didn't see a trailer for it, I don't think, anywhere, any of the movies we went to see. I don't really recall there being a trailer for it.
I don't know that we saw one, no.
Yeah, and I remember, I think I saw a part of a commercial, because Catherine can't abide commercials.
No.
And so, I remember seeing like a bit of one. Or maybe I was home by myself and could let them run through.
While you were trying to upload your adult film.
Yeah, exactly. So, essentially...
we can watch the commercials. Like, oh yeah, sweet commercial. Pillsbury Doughboy, rub me the right way.
That's right.
That's like reading
the article. I can finally see the hot Wendy's girl.
Right. Oh, look at that laptop. Open that app. Yeah.
Buddy.
Wow. Just a kind of weird.
4G. Oh, sweet Mother Christmas. Anyway, the impression I got from the one commercial I saw was, this is obviously Robert Rodriguez making a film panel for panel of a Frank Miller comic book that's noir. So I really, you know, I came away with nothing because I've already been there. And I understand, you know, I'm anxious to see what the stories are going to be. But there's nothing you're going to show me in the trailer that's going to entice me any more than the fact that I've been waiting for God knows how long for this stupid movie to come out.
Oh. Well, what do you think, Andy?
You know, I have the opposite problem that Cole does to some extent, where I don't have, we don't pay for TV, so everything I watch is either on Hulu or on Netflix.
Oh, I'm fancy. So, I don't pay for TV.
Well, I do. I pay for Hulu and Netflix. I'm poor. And I'm not fancy. I'm poor. Hulu never showed a Sin City commercial. Netflix obviously doesn't. So the only things that I had to go on were images on the internet, you know, that would pop up every once in a while. This was a movie I wasn't scared of it, like Cole said. I wasn't, you know, it doesn't matter what the storylines are. You know exactly what you're going to get.
Right.
When you're going into this movie, if you're a fan of the comic books.
Yeah, you don't need a trailer showing Marv hitting a guy, because you pretty much expect Marv's going to hit a guy.
That's the most shocking part of the entire film.
Cat's in the bag, the bag's in the river, you know, yeah, kid.
Yeah, that whole thing.
That's what you're getting. So, you know, from the images I saw, I know at least, you know, I've read A Dame to Kill For, and I've read all of the stories at some point, so I was pretty excited to know. Here's the thing, right? All the movies we've talked about, all the comic book movies, we talk about the trailers, we talk about, we hope that they don't spoil the movie, we talk about, we hope that they include this, that, and the other thing in the film that we're going to see. I didn't care. I knew exactly what I was going to get. I put my money down knowing full well that I was going to get boobies and fast cars and guns and punching, and that's all it was.
And blood.
For that reason. So there you go.
Well, I agree with Andy in that I was going to get more of Sin City, and I absolutely had loved Sin City, so I was really, really looking forward to that. I was curious, being made, what was it, 6 years after the first one?
Something like that.
If they went back to Prostitute Town.
Well, of course, you can't leave Prostitute Town.
You know,
no one leaves Prostitute Town. Nobody know how.
Despite what Hollywood says, there's a window of time in which you can wear a leather bathing suit just anywhere.
Not in Prostitute Town, there's not.
No.
And so I was wondering if they were going to recast the actresses, or if they were going to use the same ones. I mean, this is...
Rosario Dawson, six years from mind, but... 6 years from now, Rosario Dawson will still be as hot as she was six years ago.
She doesn't age.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
They only... I was a little bummed that they had to replace... Kiyosaki, whatever her name is. But that was because she got pregnant.
We'll get into that when you're a gal...
You know, you can hold on for so long, and then it's like the bottom floor just collapses.
Is that like code for your boob sag?
Yes, you just crash and burn.
That's why they created the bustier. It puts the boost in your
yay.
And computer generated graphics. That's
right.
For man and woman, right?
Yeah, because they had to turn the actress's real boobage into Frank Miller boobage.
Uh-huh.
And Frank Miller boobage just never occurred in nature.
But I did get Sin City. I got the sex and the violence and the more violence and the, oh my God, I can't believe they actually did that. Well, yeah, I did, because it's Sin City. And then the more sex. Which is exactly what I was expecting, and I got it. So I was pretty satisfied with what I was anticipating getting. And since I'm with a room full of fellas here, we'll just stay on the boobage angle and talk about your favorite parts of the movie.
Man, that Eva Green could not keep clothes on, could she?
No. She, in fact, she had my two favorite parts of the movie were Eva Green.
300, the new one, if that's...
She had gorgeous eyes. What's wrong with you people?
Aww. I get what you're talking about.
She was allergic to clothes.
But yeah. She's in 300, too, and she had the same wardrobe malfunction in that movie.
Well,
she must be made of Teflon or something. Because
I think it's. I'd like to think that it's a Frank Miller situation that she decides. Frank Miller's like, look, we're going to put you in both of my films, but you got to be naked.
One stipulation.
Because we know you don't really bring much else to the table.
How many?
Wow. How many
Frank Miller appear in one of his movies? That's what I want to know. I don't know if you were counting, but I think there's like four or five times that he's in the Sin City movie.
He looks there. Let's just say he looks horrible.
He needs to use some of his own CG on himself, I think.
That's right. He should have spent a few hours in the makeup chair.
He should have played Marv this time.
Now, I was happy to see Marv. I mean, I was like, yay, Marv, brutal death, yay, Marv, beat somebody up, take his head off, yay, rip his arms off, yay.
Here's my problem with Marv in this one. While one, I felt more like, he seemed like kind of like phoning it in this time around.
Kind of.
But his face has gotten large, so he looked like Rocky Dennis now.
Yeah, he had that weird... No, he did. He had John Merrick's face. He got big... I noticed that, Bobby, that it was not the same.
It was wider and kind of fatter. And it was very distracting. To me, it was distracting. Like, the first movie, you know, I could see Frank Miller's art come off the page.
Yeah.
In this one, I can see Frank Miller's art with, like, Scotty Young enhanced his face to make him cartoony, and it just looks weird. It just looks, not even unnatural for a comic book, unnatural for anything to exist that looks like that.
Yeah, that weird bridge of the nose was the only thing that stuck from the previous incarnation.
I kept waiting for Cher to come out to help him do
take him to a field of flowers or something.
Nice. Yeah, or go hang out with a blind chick and a horse.
Oh. Wow.
Yes, I've seen him numerous times.
Nothing makes me happier in the first 5 minutes of a movie than a bunch of frat boys setting a hobo on fire. If I get this in every movie, I will be so happy.
That's a little hateful there, sir.
It's only a movie.
Yeah, right.
And one of the things that I think was
I just enjoyed him killing the frat boys. He, you know, it's nice that he had a justifiable motivation, translation a good excuse, but at the end of the day, it was just nice to see him kill frat boys.
I do think, though, that Marv translated better the character, even though it did seem like a little bit like he was phoning it in, the character translated better from the comic to the movie in this one compared to the last one, because I thought the last one was very forced. I thought his portrayal of Marv was very forced in the last one.
Yeah.
Like, Marv strikes me as a very angry person, but not the kind of angry person that he was in the first one. This is more like it. Like, it's like Cole and I say about nationalities, the Scottish versus the Irish. Like the Scottish go looking for the fight, the Irish, the fight finds them. The fight just finds Marv, you know? Just alright. He's like, there's going to be a lot of killing and a lot of guns. Sure, why not? Let's go. You know, that's just the way Marv always struck me in the comics. Like, yep, I just found myself in this situation. I have very loose moral compunctions. Let's just do this thing. How about that? All right, you're my friend. Give me two shotguns. Why not? Let's do it.
Well, see, I think one of the issues with this particular film, like, again, the more I've sat with it, the more I've really enjoyed it and would love to see it again. But I think the advertising, what trailers, I know y'all said y'all didn't see a lot of the promos.
Uh-huh.
The problem was the misadvertising of it, because there's a lot of people going into the film that don't understand that half of the movie is a prequel.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know people that were complaining about, why didn't they bring Clive Owen back? I'm like, because he's not supposed to look like that. But they should have brought him back in that second half, because freaking Josh Brolin looked retarded.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from him having the Clive Owen little spit curls on either side of his head, he really wasn't selling the... I mean, he sold a more sort of, you know, Mark I post-surgery.
Wait, he looked like somebody from Dick Tracy.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. Well, everybody in this movie kind of looked like somebody from Dick
Tracy. Yeah, that's so true.
Stacey Keach came right out of the Dick Tracy movie, too.
Oh, my God. Any movie that has equal parts Powers Booth and Stacey Keach. Oh, I would have it.
That was literally like Powers Booth. Until you mentioned that, I didn't realize that Senator Rourke was Powers Booth playing Stacey Keach. playing, it's Powers Booth playing Stacey Keach, playing Sergeant Stadenko, playing Senator Rourke.
You know what I think is
it's a very complex web. It becomes like Prospero's books.
Well, one of the cool things, like, I love Powers Booth as an actor, but he's not a pretty man. And
no.
He always plays a senator or a villain or something, but somehow that the extra
Hey, he
line,
didn't play a villain in Red Dawn, mister.
No, he did not.
He should have.
He didn't play a villain in this movie either.
Everybody,
he's a politician trying to get by.
Yeah, but the way they light him and they make his eyes so freaking bright, him just like, even when he's not being creepy, he's constantly creepy.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the picture behind him close to the end of the movie. I think he's standing there, and he's got the shadow on his face, but the same shadow is on the photo in the behind.
It felt so much like Principal Blackman in *Strangers with Candy* on that
I envision that he's like has a guy that walks around and lights him everywhere he stands.
Right. He's the guy that brings the crew with him, the makeup crew, the lighting crew, the sound crew.
That's right.
Exactly. Anyway, we're talking about the lighting stuff. That one thing I will say about this one, it looked way crisper.
Yeah.
It's like it looked way more, like the car stuff especially, even though there wasn't as many, long, crazy car chases, the cars were like brighter and more vibrant, and it felt like it fit the story, the visuals of the whole thing better.
Uh-huh.
But the comic effect, the idea that they made the first one and they made this one to pull, the effects off of the page and put them onto film using CG, played a lot better in this one, I thought, than the first one. Like, I don't know whether it's just the fact that technology's caught up to a point where you can really, really do that, but a lot of the things that they did that were supposed to look like comic panels the way that Frank Miller was going to do them played very well on screen in this one. Like, there's the scene where they're playing poker and Jessica Alba's character was sitting back there with the gun and looking at the broken wall, like, with the slats out. And then the light hits her, and it's across her eyes. And if I remembered right, and I was going back and looking at it in my head, that you could put those two side by side on the comic, and it looks the same. Like the last one, it was obviously they were trying to do that, but they wanted it stylized enough that it was like, well, this is a movie based on a comic book based on these panels. It's also a movie that's based on this. They were like, fuck it, we're just going to take it straight off the page. Uh-huh. And this one looks pretty dead on. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah, well,
It
did come out with a lot of really good images, a lot of terrific moments, especially where you have just one element colored, like the eyes or the lips or the prop or what have you.
Oh, or they do like they did in the first one with the glasses,
I love the glasses thing.
It would just be bright white, like Mr. Potato Head gangster guy.
I love the glasses stuff is cool. That's what made Elijah Wood's character in the first one so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, they make them seem soulless when you blank out the eyes like that.
And the thing is, you can't get anybody to act against those effects. We've seen that. Mm-hmm. You've got to get somebody like Chris Maloney and Piven together in a car driving down the road that are both phenomenal actors. And they proved it in this because they weren't acting to script and acting against a comic book that had been written, and they've got to make this sound believable.
Uh-huh.
But they're acting against a green screen backdrop, but they're also acting against green screen optical wear. So you've got to really be able to sell that. And they did it. And it was really cool. I love Jeremy Piven playing against type. Where he was the actual good cop instead of the smarmy asshole guy.
He was almost unrecognizable.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew I saw him in the credits, I'm like, oh, sweet, and I looked for him, I'm like, where the hell is he? and then I saw him, it took me a minute while he was talking, I'm like, wait a minute, holy crap, that's it. he's not as bad as, the fake Clive Owen, but...
Well, that the detective was actually driven mad. His acting, as he acted the character, he really seemed like he was losing his mind.
Well, I think Chris Maloney lost his mind a long time ago.
I like Chris Maloney, though. I think
I do too. He's an excellent actor, but I think ever since Oz, he kind of lost his shit.
Well, that was just making perfect casting, you know?
Exactly. Now, I have to say, when you say perfect casting, even though this segment of the movie was pretty much pointless, I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt was the coolest-ass person in that entire movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, especially because I can't see Joseph Gordon-Levitt in anything and not see Andy. Andy is Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this. And that's when I cast USG the movie, that's who I cast. I mean, boom, there he is.
That's what sucks is Andy's still not going to get the part.
I know.
But no, like that whole story, like I'll be first admitted, I haven't read tons of this Sin City stuff in the books. And when that story, I didn't know where it was. That was kind of the cool thing for me because I didn't know where those other stories were going. I know the one was written specifically for the movie, but right. Then the other parts, you know, were from the book stuff, but I didn't know where they were going. So when he gets killed, it was kind of like, well, that whole entire thing was freaking pointless, but it was still probably the most entertaining to me of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just because of him, because he fit in that world. He was cool.
Yeah,
it was just a very noir story. You could have made that movie,
right?
And I would have gone and seen it without being associated with Sin City. And I think the other thing I really like about all the actors we've talked about and what the portrayal, and I don't know whether this is Rodriguez because he kind of did it. He kind of has done this in all of his movies. Is this idea that the world that you exist in is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy where everything just comes natural. Like Brolin, when he was on the roof looking in at another piece of inspired casting, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Ray Liotta, in the room with the prostitute.
Well, nobody can do pensive argument the way Ray Liotta does.
It's like Giovanni Ribisi crying. Nobody does it like he does.
good night.
But when he decides that he's going to jump through the skylight, he's sort of like, okay, I got the shots that I needed. All right, he's got his gun out. Okay, I'm just going to go. Got to do what I got to do. Jump through the skylight. Marv, got to do what I got to do. Give me two shotguns. Yeah. You know, like, everybody just kind of like, nah. Like, even the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character was sort of like that. Like, I'm going back in. It's what I'm going to do. You know, and it's just sort of that nonchalance, good guy, noir, you know, taped up nose, black eye.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing that they've done so well. And I think that beyond being just a movie about a comic book, right, and a good comic book and Frank Miller and being all kitschy and all that, there's a big space in the current medium that's open, and we get one every 3 or 4 years for a good noir movie, you know, like just a good hokey 1940s top of the world mob gangster movie that we just don't get anymore. So,
well, and I think that's one of the reasons it bombed was because the new fanciness to it when it came out the first time, people had no idea what they were going into.
Yeah.
They didn't read the comic. It was like, what the hell is this? It's something different in a world of sequels and remakes.
Right.
And so they went to see it. You know, everybody loved it. Then they waited so long, it's like, oh, it looks like the same movie.
Yeah, the signature gap, I mean, you know, speaking as a Star Wars fan, you make a damn near a decade or longer gap, you start to lose a lot of your interest. You know, I didn't think I'd still be alive by the time there was a Star Wars sequel.
I don't know though, because it was nice to have something new like that again. I mean,
but when you look at the trailers, though, it looks like from an outside perspective, it looks like the same movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't look like there's
anything
new.
That's you going in as a fan of the actual source material, or at least the concepts. But
right.
If you've been waiting, you know, 6 years later, you haven't necessarily been waiting for a sequel because you never knew there was one coming, especially with that kind of gap. And you see this come on, you say, well, I've already seen this movie.
Well, well, that's not what I said to myself. I said,
no, but I'm not,
I really enjoyed that, and it's nice just to see another one.
I think what I'm referring to is, as an outsider, as a person who isn't, you know, as a casual moviegoer, somebody who does, I mean, we can wax about, you know, what we get out of films all day long, but we get a lot more, quite frankly, out of film than your average filmgoer.
Yeah, the average person is going to only go see, like, the big blockbusters. They're not going to watch the weird stuff. They're not going to watch the cheesy B stuff. You know, they're going to be like, oh, is Tom Cruise in it? Then I'll go see it. Oh, who is this guy? I'm not watching that movie.
Your average film goer who might have gone and seen Sin City 6 years ago and actually enjoyed it, much to their own surprise, would look upon this if they saw the trailer or commercials and stuff and say, I think I've already seen this movie.
Well, and they hyped it up so much with Bruce Willis in the first one, and he was still a major box office draw, so I guarantee half of the audience were the common people. The other half of people that didn't know anything about it were going to see Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
You know, and now, even though he's in the film for a little while,
it didn't have anybody that you could point to and say, well, that would be the, you know, I don't read comics draw.
Yeah, because Mickey Rourke is kind of like, he was hot at that time, too.
Yeah.
Because of the Wrestler and all that stuff was kind of coming around, and not Hellboy, but the Wrestler and Iron Man 2 was getting, you know, all the casting stuff was coming around, and I know he did this one before that, but he was at least somewhat of a name because of the awards and stuff that were following him, but it kind of, nobody cares about him. His star has fallen again. You know, he still does movies, but he's not the draw, and like I said, there's no...
Yeah, all the key actors were cool, great actors and stuff. But
right.
None of them were ones you could just sort of throw out and tell people, oh, by the way, you know, here's Jimmy Spitz.
Well, before we transition over to our criticisms, I do want to say that I was really, really happy that this was made, because the first thing out of anybody's mouth or the first thing you see on Facebook or Twitter or whatever you follow is the weekend box office, and the fact of the matter is, this is not going to make a whole lot of money, because you can't dump a bunch of kids into an SUV and take them to go see it.
But I don't think
that's really the nature of that, because the first one did make a lot of money.
But also. On my same point, it's not the new weird thing, like, for example, Avatar was new and weird and strange and cool, and so it got a lot of attention for that. But still, it's a really good quality movie just for adults, and it's not going to make a whole lot of money, and I thank God that it was made, though, because I worry about the day where movies just aren't going to get made because they don't fall into the cash cow category.
Well, the problem with the movies is, and it's not even the cash cow aspect anymore, really. The problem is we live in a world where everybody bitches and complains about, I'm tired of them remaking this, I'm tired of making a sequel, but as soon as they make something original, no one goes to see it.
Right.
Because they want to see the remakes. They want to see the sequels as much as they want to complain about it. But if you bring something out, you know, like now you get a sequel to this film, and it's just not, you know, Avatar did great, but they're still talking about, everybody's still posting and excited about seeing Avatar 2 and 3, and it's going to still be a while before we ever get them. Mm-hmm. With Sin City, once its hype went away, it was gone.
Right.
So when the new Sin City came out, the only people that were going to go see it were the people that were either hardcore fans of the comics, or the people that just loved that first movie so much that they couldn't wait for it. Everybody else was like, I've been there, done that.
The other place that it suffered, and you know, it could never have been predicted. I mean, you know, you could look at, okay, here's what other studios are coming out with. You could point, well, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is probably going to do well. I don't think you could have anticipated it would do as well, because you're thinking, well, it's Michael Bay, so that's a big strike against. But nobody expected Guardians of the Galaxy to set fire to the world like it did.
Right.
And so you're hot on the heels of these things in an economy where, you know, I'll miss movies for time or money or both.
Right.
And unfortunately, the timing was such that late in the summer, hot on the heels of two big things that were still a pretty big audience draw, there's a lot of diversion that's going to happen. I mean, you're going to lose an audience to something all the time, regardless. But I think it also suffered a bit. And the unfortunate thing is that the very first thing you see, because it's falling on the heels of Guardians of the Galaxy making it, you know, its own miniature Fort Knox, and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and all of a sudden, you know, these are being touted as, whoa, hooray, the box office has been rescued from the doldrums. Like, what do you mean doldrums? There were other big successes all year long.
Right.
So far. But we keep forgetting when, you know, 2 weeks after the big hoopla success, something tanks. And all of a sudden, oh my God, Hollywood is dead. It wasn't dead 2 weeks ago.
And well, well, yeah, and it's
to see on Saturday afternoon, when this thing comes out on Friday, you know, Sin City tanks big at box office. It didn't tank because it didn't make any money. It tanked because it didn't make the money that Guardians of the Galaxy and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles made. So immediately everybody thinks, well, if you haven't made $600 billion in your first 20 minutes, you're not even worth wiping my ass on.
Well, and here's the other thing, is that who would have thought, right, when you're planning on releasing a movie, you're releasing a movie in a summer, and late in a summer, when there aren't any huge franchise movies that are coming out. You've got a Marvel movie called Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm talking like maybe a year, year and a half ago when they were planning on their release date for Sin City, Dame to Kill For. Like, okay, there aren't no Avengers, no Captain America, no Thor, no Iron Man. All right, great, yeah. So there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, it's Michael Bay, yeah, it's gonna get its market share, whatever. The Marvel movie's gonna get its market share, that's fine. But we have a shot right now, in this time period, you know, in this month, at this time, to capture the marketplace. That's because of all of the disparate, you know, moving parts of the movie industry and the way that everything's marketed. We can do it right now. They had no idea that, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, any more than anybody else did, was going to make the money that it did. You know, they were still going to be up against this, you know, juggernaut of a film this far
into the run. Yeah, I think it was probably anticipated to have come and gone by the time they even hit the theater.
Exactly.
And instead, people are like, well, do you want to see this or this? Well, I want to go see Guardians again. That was fun. I don't know what this is, or I'm familiar with this, but I can wait.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of that. That's the unfortunate business end of the thing. The movie itself, as a product, unfortunately suffers financially for it. It doesn't mean that it's a bad movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the downside of that. But, you know, it was not a great movie either.
Well, Cole, why don't you take us into our nitpicks and criticisms then, since you're kind of on that path there.
Okay. So I'll be
since you're so
old. Yeah, society is so hateful. When Bobby mentioned earlier about the pacing feeling very slow, that was the first impression I had of this film. It took the better part of the first act for me to get to a point where I felt like, you know, we finally switched gears a bit. And that's not to say that it was just a ponderous, you know, dull plotting thing, but it seemed like the pacing of my impression of the original was lacking. It just seemed to, you know, just trying to get up in the morning and get the bones moving. and then it got kind of going. I do want to say in the positive side, the actor who replaced the late Michael Clark Duncan as Manute.
Oh, Dennis Haysbert?
Yeah.
Could not have been better cast, because it's like, I almost, if I didn't know, if I was just a casual film goer, I may not have ever realized they'd changed actors.
Well, I couldn't see it without thinking about buying some auto insurance.
Right.
Home insurance.
I mean, he really, and I did like the fact that, in so far as the storyline goes, I mean, by the time the first one was made, most of the stories that occur in this one had already been written. They were already published.
Yeah.
Right.
And I like the fact that by seeing these stories, you get to see why Manute in the first one seems to be just so venomous about Dwight.
Right.
Question. Since you brought that up,
they have some history there.
I have a quick question, and this is just my, I know part of this is probably the lack that of me reading the books, but at the end of that storyline, they shoot him full of holes like they kill him, but then he comes back. So is that the implication that he doesn't die at the end of that storyline, and then he just shows back up?
I think it is in the same way that Marv has probably been, you know. You think Bullet Tooth Tony in Snatch was tough.
Well, no,
Marv's been shot like 110 times in one sitting.
Well, I get that, but what I'm saying is, like, I know that, you know, you get to see the origin of the eye, and...
Yeah. Yeah, I think that what's implicit there, if you put the two side by side, is that perhaps in some untold cinematically story, or just for the hell of it, Manute survived being shot up.
Okay, I didn't know if there was something. I didn't know if there was something I missed in relation to the storyline.
No,
there was no big reveal. They didn't have, like, you know, if they'd had coverage of him, like, getting up and dusting himself off, or, you know, wringing out his cap or something later. I guess Marv
had stolen his cap. About Marv, and I guess, you know, about everybody. She was like, well, are they, like, immortal? Are they, you know, are they superhuman? Are they, you know, and I was thinking about that, and I'm like, no, I just think they're caricatures.
Yes.
You know, I just think they're the caricature of that noir idea of the tough guy taken to the nth degree in Frank Miller's head.
They're archetypes. They're archetypes.
Right.
But, you know, on the bad side, I'd say my chief complaint was it was just the footing was very rough, and it took a while for it to find its place. And then by the time it did, you almost didn't realize that, you know, you're stuck in this kind of limbo of, like, wait a minute, okay, the pacing had picked up, but I'm not sure where. But I'm pretty sure it's no longer annoyingly slow paced, and now I don't know what to think, and you just go ahead and go with it.
I did get lost between, okay, this is flashback, okay, this is
present
or future, this is flashback. I did get lost two or three times in the process of
that. You think Pulp Fiction's hard to piece together in the back of
mind. Well, it is a movie, and my real only complaint about it is this: it is a movie that really relies heavily on you being aware of their universe, and if you're not a comic fan, having seen the first Sin City movie.
Uh-huh.
If you haven't, like, Lacey hasn't, and she was lost.
Well, but yes. The problem is if somebody doesn't go back to watch it, especially, again, because of how long it's been since it's been out, and you don't realize that there's a prequel aspect to this, you're going to be lost.
And that's what happened, It's like, I have no idea what...
Yeah, something, you know, I'm thrilled to see Marv again. Why am I seeing Marv again? Of course, because this has to take place, but then, okay, if that's Nancy then, here's Nancy, and it was very difficult to work out.
I need Neil deGrasse Tyson to tell me where the
cosmos. Yeah, he really did. I need Neil deGrasse Tyson and Stephen Hawking to work out some sort of, you know, boil down some sort of algorithm into some, you know, refined version that I could have as a sort of an elixir of understanding.
Elixir of Understanding.
Ooh, that sounds
good. Let me reach into my bag of holding and get Cole his Elixir of Understanding.
Wow, that was an angry response.
Sorry.
I got a little hostile about it. Sorry, somebody else put out big words.
Really?
That's Andy's thing. We all stole it. Sorry.
Sorry to steal your thunder there.
Oh, thunder stealer.
That's gonna be the cologne. What'd you think cologne is going to be, the elixir?
Elixir of Understanding?
That's right.
Yeah, it's my cologne. It's the JCU cologne, the Elixir of Understanding. No, see, I didn't have a problem with the pacing, because much the same that as we were talking about archetypes and caricatures, I think that, you know, and almost in the same way that, like, Tarantino does homage movies, you know, to everything, love letters to everything.
Yeah.
I felt that this was, in a lot of ways, this was their love letter or their homage to that period movie. And if you ever go back and watch, you know, Touch of Evil or any of the old noir movies, they are paced so horribly. Just so slow. There's a lot of shots of people sitting on a sofa, and there's a dial, you know, there's a rotary phone that rings, and they talk on it for 30 minutes, and then they hang it up, and it's, and then they get into an old car, and they drive for another 30 minutes, and then it's just...
Oh, yeah, like I see what you mean, though, because it's that same sort of pacing that was used, that lent itself beautifully to Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
Yeah.
Because there were so many just blank moments that you could insert that back and forth that made such a brilliant comedy, like the scene with the cookies.
Yeah, I agree with you, and with stuff like that, you're just so hungry for something to happen when the phone rings. You could almost cry. You're so happy.
That's right, thank God.
Hey, the phone rings. Somebody.
But not off the couch.
It's like that whole thing, like, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like everything is an aside or a soliloquy or an external monologue. Or and in a place like this, that darkness, you know, it's just like, come on, guy, really? Like, I get it. You have the ability to put CG smoke into a bar. For God's sake, we all get it.
I'm going to have to ask you to calm down. You're a little hostile there, sir.
The other thing that really upsets me about this movie is I'm getting old, and the boobs just don't do it for me anymore.
Aww.
Like, I'm like, you know, I'm like...
That's not getting old. That's changing orientations.
Like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, like, yeah, all the boobies, show me all the boobies! Now I'm like, yeah, look, it's some more boobies. Great. Story. Roll the story along, please.
Are you kidding? Those boobies rolled the story along beautifully.
I can honestly say...
Or the beautiful boobies were part of the rolling story.
I can honestly say in my older age that I don't have that problem. I just don't want to see the boobies.
Hey, Bobby, once you've seen Eva Green's boobs 45 times, the 46th time is not that big a deal.
Here's where you go wrong. You're still thinking of... You're looking at it as Eva Green's boobs. I'm just looking at the boobs.
That's probably...
I was like... Look, there's boobs, Jessica Alba. Boobs! You know, I'm not paying attention to whose boobs they are anymore. They're just there. As far as I'm concerned, they're just boobs floating in the room.
Well, they're immaculately lit.
Exactly.
Right.
And they defy gravity.
Really, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I really think they wanted you to look at them.
I do too. I think that was pretty much the focal point.
You literally, with Eva especially, you're thinking... My boobs are down here, mister.
Exactly.
I think that's why why Frank Miller chose to accentuate her eyes.
You didn't even hear the dialogue, did you?
What?
I was going to say, she talked?
Yeah. I saw her chest move.
You know how long you have to go to Juilliard to be able to emote with your breasts in such a fashion where the dialogue doesn't matter and you can just tell the story? With your mammary gland. That is the work.
Show me pouty. Show me livid.
No, it's really funny about that, and I'm not even kidding. I don't even remember what she did in that movie.
She swam
I remember her
and
being
bathed.
In the bathtub.
She bore her breath.
I
she
remember
swam
her being
and bathed a lot.
I think she was smoking at some point.
Yeah, she did bathe a lot.
But I don't know.
Swim.
I don't even remember her point in this story was.
She was the spider. She was the spider lady. Like that was her.
Yeah.
There were spiders in the movie.
It was the old noir idea, you know, that the myth,
Black
the
Widow
myth,
thing,
the Black Widow. Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing. But it didn't matter. Like you knew the story. That's the whole thing about this movie is every story you've seen a thousand times in a thousand different ways. You're just watching it a different way, and that's what makes it great because it doesn't matter what she says. She's not going to deliver any. You know, she's not winning any Sundance awards for her presentation of whatever the name of her character
is. She could win an AVN award.
Yeah. Right. Of course she could.
Yeah, she won that very special award that Bobby reserves for very special boobies.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so, fellas, how many boobies would you give this movie?
I do want to point out, though, before we get there, that I did like that you got to finally see the old Wolverine guy from the bar.
Space Waits, Space Tom Waits, as I
like
to call
him.
Logan Waits.
And it, like in the comic where, you know, Frank Miller practices that amazing economy of detail, it's just his his facial mane is just a shock of white with precious
right.
little detail. There's little, you know, individuality between the hairs that make up the hair on his head and on his cheeks. It's just this big wash of whiteness.
It was very cool. It was very cool.
And like, I've seen that guy. Because he's like always in scenes when they're at the bar.
Yeah, in the comics. He's in all of those scenes.
Yeah, it's like he's always got that big shit-eaten grin, and he's always just like, you know, the eyes bugged out. And
he's enjoying the show.
Yeah.
When you look at speaking of the show, I got to point this out. I'm sure it was part on purpose, but until she went completely batshit crazy, Jessica Alba's dancing was horrible.
Well, yeah, because
she was driving. But she was driving me crazy with her flinging arms, and it's like if I would be asking for my money back for that show.
No, you wouldn't. Barb would have broken your hands if you had money.
I would have said, you know what, break them, because you cannot look at that and tell me that's a good show. I'm sorry, Marv.
I have to defer to the guys on this one, because I don't go to these types of clubs.
Oh, don't act like you haven't ever been.
But didn't she have a lot on for being an exotic dancer? I mean,
she's an exotic dancer, not a stripper.
Right, I think that's the distinction. Well, this was the Boom Boom Room, not, you know, the Cheetah Club. That's the distinction.
Well, the thing about it was, though, in the comics, Nancy is topless. But in the comics, Nancy is not Jessica Alba, who
right.
probably refused to play that role, and they were so interested in having a bankable name 6 years ago.
And they still picked Jessica Alba?
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Sorry about that.
But again,
they must have saw Into the Blue and they saw her butt and they hey that's
because
oh, yeah.
because surely nudity wouldn't be an issue in this movie, so why have the dancers wear so much clothes?
Because there's an issue of Jessica Alba getting nude.
Okay.
Yeah,
and in my mind again, it's that whole homage thing, you know, because
it's more of a burlesque,
right?
You know,
right.
They,
yeah.
Because the exotic dancer aspect are not naked or not even topless. They're very sensual. Yeah, they were.
But also the people of Sin City, I mean, they have an entire like neighborhood that's given over to. Yeah, they have an entire like the French Quarter was a brothel or something. They
everybody
like
in Sin City.
9,000 square blocks of whorehouse. That's how jaded they are about their sexuality. See a girl dancing fully clothed is sexy.
It's an entire city of Andy. He's tired of the only
other attractive women.
They're all old men.
They're all Andy.
The only other
attractive
women in the entire town live on the rooftops and carry crossbows.
Yeah.
That's so true. This is the least dangerous until she starts like, carrying a gun on stage.
Maybe that's how they know when it's that they can, you know, they can have that they might have a chance having sex with somebody because they're not armed and they have their clothes on and it's not leather.
That bar in Sin City in Old Town is like Cheers.
Like I want to meet the guy that owns that bar because that guy's making a killing because that's the only bar anybody goes to.
Right. Every story revolves around that bar. It's like a Russian
bar. He's making all the money off the liquor. Off the girls, off the TV rights, because they're filming all this stuff at his bar, and
make
they're
no power booth in the bathroom playing poker though.
That's
no money.
Right. Yeah, no worries, Mike.
But I'm here to tell you, fellas, that I don't care what your job is. If you've got a second shift job doing security on the rooftop, you don't wear your work clothes. You change into some blue jeans and a t-shirt or something comfortable.
Those are the after-hour clothes. Those are that's the Old Town Snuggie. That's what we call them.
Yeah, because during the rest of the time, we're not wearing clothes. So
yeah, that's dress casual up there. That's casual day.
That's Welcome to Bank of America right there.
They should have given us an entire segment of just the day in the life of the whore in an Old Town. You see them going to the grocery store.
I would pay money to see that. It's like,
you know, and they're just
you're
all
shopping,
you're
shopping at Walmart, and it's like, I want something that looks like, I don't know, 10 different colored belts that have been sewn together.
I want to see, if we're able to see that, see them living their daily lives, But then you also see them getting dressed, and they're like, I'll be dressed in like 4 hours, you know, and then see them with a client, and they're like, look, not only do you have to pay for us, do you want all this off? Because that's an extra 3 hour charge that we got to take this off.
Yeah. You think it took a long time to dress make Mickey Rourke up as Marv?
As Rocky Dennis.
He's 3.5 hours in the makeup chair. They're 3.5 hours just in wardrobe trying to get all
this. It's bizarro hookers in Sin City. The less you wear, the less attract. The more you wear, because everybody's just naked all the time. So the
just
more
like
weird leather hoods and crossbows and switchblades on crossbows and leather hoods with switchblades attached to them and crossbows, swords you can carry with you.
Yeah.
Oh, and yes, by the way, Bobby, it did really affect the movie for me, the A-hole being a different character.
It bothered me at first. I thought Jamie Chung did a good job with it, but, you know, it bothered me at first, but knowing that it wasn't one of those, you know, we just went with somebody else kind of thing,
right.
It actually didn't bother me as much. You know, I was able to let it go and accept it. You know,
you know, it was either that or Dwight would be like, pregnant little meow.
Exactly.
Little meow.
But no, he wouldn't have done that because they couldn't get fucking Clive Owen to come back for 5 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, true.
I thought Josh Brolin
was
it's the pregnant girl.
Well, at least, I mean, they could have at least done some, like, you know, like flashback, you know, file footage cameo like they did with Nick Stahl.
Well, true. Well, but I just don't understand why they wouldn't even. I mean, maybe they tried to, and he was just a dick because he seems like he might be kind of a dick. But why they didn't get him to
probably could be
to come back for that? You know, that what less than 5 minute sequence at the end of the movie that they need him to look like that would have made not only that story cooler, but I think it would have made people understand it what they're watching.
Because
looking at what they did, it took me a second, and I knew what the fuck was going on to see, like, why is he, what is he, shut up, sorry, my dog didn't like that sequence either. I look at it, I'm like, what is he supposed to be, who is that, you know, and then it's like, oh, that's right, the plastic surgery, you know, but it just, I don't know, I'm sure there's some reasoning behind it, because, you know, they went out of their way to get everybody else back. So, you know, Clive Owen's making such prominent films right now. I'm sure he didn't want
to. Being somebody who just, you know, has to justify everything, I sort of justified that as what you saw there was like I was saying earlier, that's like the Mark I plastic surgery.
Oh, he had it again. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, they gave him more plastic surgery so they could, like, sort of un-Josh Brolin him and Clive Owen him up.
I got you. Well, I'm wondering if, like, the makeup person, as we were discussing it earlier, I started thinking about it. I'm wondering if, when they're doing the Marv makeup, if they just had the wrong image up. So maybe they the whole time they were trying to make him Rocky Dennis, and then halfway through it, they realized, oh, crap, that's not what he's supposed to look like, and they took the red wig off of him, and, you know. Because if you think about it, Rocky Dennis kind of has the same nose, too.
Well, that's...
His nose and his eye sockets and his head just all kind of merge into one big slap.
Okay, fellas.
Well, with that,
Andrew, get us started. How many sexy mommy parts do you want to give?
I give this movie 4 out of 5 Joseph Gordon-Levitt broken fingers. Because that was, in my opinion, the hardest part to watch in the whole movie, next to Eva Green's acting. Mm-hmm. If she did that, I'm not sure if she said words, but his getting his fingers broken by Powers Booth.
Yep. Yeah, I can't watch stuff like that. I can't watch it in Blade Runner.
Through Blade Runner.
Yeah.
That's a crucial moment.
Yeah.
Those are the best parts of the movie. Come on, man.
Okay, Bobby, what'd you think?
Let me think what I want to go with this one. I'm on the fence on this because, like I said, I was kind of put off on it, and I kind of want to watch it again to kind of see how it holds up.
I feel the same. I feel like I might want to see it a second time.
But I think I'm going to, in homage to Total Recall, I think I'm going to give it three boobs out of 5.
Nice.
And that's strictly just because, like I said, I just think the pacing was a little off for me. And again, it's one of those I liked better after I sat with it. But, until I see it again, I don't know if it's going to go up too much yet.
Okay, okay. Cole, what do you think?
I'm going to have to say, because of the pacing, because it was kind of hard for me to get into, I can only give it about maybe 3 to 3.5 non-topless dances. Or 3 to 3.5 golden replacement eyes.
Yeah, that's good too. Okay. I haven't had one in my hand for years.
Okay.
Said with a great line.
Well, I enjoyed it very much, and it was exactly what I expected it to be. I will probably see it again. I'm not going to run out and buy it, though.
Yes, you are.
I am going to give it 4 out of 5 cans of Hershey syrup used for blood.
Nice.
And,
I'm a little concerned what's going on at y'all's house now.
It involves syrup and dancing.
Cole, just clear your throat if you just to save you.
Syrup.
Help me, Bobby.
That didn't even sound like a save. That was like,
by the way,
that was
my
a
final
borderline,
thought is,
that was borderline sling blade.
my final thought is, I think that what did you decide to call it? Prostitute Town? Is definitely Muggerville adjacent. So
yes, indeed. Very close to Muggerville. Suburb of Muggerville.
Well, I hope it, even though it didn't make the money we all hoped it did, I hope it does well enough for them to make, you know, Day in the Life of a Whore, so we can watch the What Happens in Old Town.
I do. I want to see that. I want to see that as a spinoff.
Yeah,
they can always do a documentary.
The Old Town story.
Little did you know that because of the weird lighting that they do through the whole thing, both Sin City and Sin City A Dame to Kill For were actually supposed to have been shot and portrayed on screen during the day. So those were day shoots. I don't know if you knew that or not. It's all daytime, bright noon.
That was actually a new technique called night for day.
That
normally
just means,
it's the opposite.
That explains so much for some of the Joseph Gordon-Levitt horror, because the ugly ones always come out during the day.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt horror. Forever. Is that the way she appears on IMDb? Jeez.
I don't know what that bitch's name was, but the whole time I'm thinking, dude, you're such a badass. Why did you pick that one? Like, and then I'm like, as soon as he picked her, I'm like, God, we're going to have to stare at her the rest of this damn movie.
I'll tell you why. He had to save all his money for the game.
That's right. He got the
cheapest. He was like the Kmart of prostitutes. Dollar General or the Dollar Tree of prostitutes.
I think that's probably why they kept cutting back to Eva Green's boobs, because they like she's gonna have to look at her for a while. Go show Eva Green's boobs, and then we'll get back to her.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Everybody's minds will be blinded for a few seconds. By the time we get done with that scene, it'll be all right.
Show Tom Waits Lobo. Okay, now show her again. Now show Eva Green's boobs.
All right, there we go.
And then back to Rocky Dennis.
It's the rule of three.
Oh. Well, thanks everybody for joining us, and go. Go see a movie, and hopefully later you can join us at What'd You Think?
Bye.
Rocky Dennis, boob face.